The last episode was about storming the Capitol, and this one is called Insurrection. Tony, we know what happened. We know what happened on January 6th. Okay? We're trying to think about it less. So unless you... Do you know something we don't, Tony? Is this a sign? Is something going to... Give us... make a sequel to Plane if this is a sign, Tony. Just let us know. Anyway, Star Trek Insurrection was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name is Sean Collier. I'm here with two people who did not volunteer as tribute when it comes to this litany of recording issues. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And especially Robin Hitchcock.
You're muted, Robin.
I just did a really good, really
I can
good
see it. I can
whistle.
Tell this what you were doing.
Yeah. And it was really good.
That was really good.
Thank you.
Let's run down all the things that are wrong right now. We've gone virtual, maybe temporarily. Who knows?
Yeah.
For good reason. Camila's got some work to do during
yep.
the day.
Mama's got a new job. Back to the 9-to-5 grind.
Which is great. So
yes.
we're trying to mess around with some of the virtual stuff. Just three people, grown up schedules, things are hard. So we all have new or temporary equipment that we're trying to figure out as we go. I have a microphone because Robin gave me her old microphone. Thank you very much.
It was a present to me.
I'm already, laughing at this gift by forgetting the little windscreen. And yeah, but more importantly, hey, my theater company, Vigilance Theater Group, will be presenting Erica Schmidt's Macbeth. It's a contemporary take on the classic language, new setting. If you're in Pittsburgh, look us up at vigilancetheater.com. They're also rehearsing 15 to 20 feet away from me right now. You will be hearing them over the course of this episode.
It's a sneak peek, if you
That's
will.
Right.
Yes.
Usually you have to donate for that.
Yeah.
The completely ineffective viral marketing. That's what I'm here doing. Anything else? Does that about cover it?
Well, it's also Nomia After Dark. So yes. Camila and I are both enjoying an adult beverage. I have a simply spiked tropical pineapple. This is not an ad. No one's paying us for this. I just have it.
I just have good old-fashioned Corona.
Mm. Also good?
Mm-hmm.
I probably have more to do later. So... coffee and water, just grinding through the night like I do. But listen, all of that aside, here's another Star Trek movie. Okay, it's a silly time. I don't know. I meant to watch at least one Next Generation episode, like for a frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get around to it. I don't think it would have affected this one way or the other. This is just kind of some space stuff, and sometimes it's dumb, and sometimes it's kind of amusing.
This was like taking a tab of acid and trying to follow a German sock puppet show with like no subtitles at all.
That's,
like this.
That's different from my reaction.
That's how I feel about this one.
It is a little wacky compared to the last Star Trek we watched, two or three months ago, whenever that was.
Right. And again, you were right. Like, I am gumming in cold. Like, I have never laid eyes on any of these, on this iteration
of
Star Trek.
Well, you saw Michael Dorn as his own grandfather in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
What the? Yeah, okay.
Trekkie with imposter syndrome, Robin Hitchcock. Give us some context. What's happening? Where are we in the film series and the TV series when it comes to Star Trek Insurrection?
So at this point, the Next Generation series was over for quite some time. I think this is the third movie with the Next Gen cast, because they do one that has both called Generations. And then they... Sean, You son of a bitch. Sorry. Okay. It's going to be fine. Okay. So this was the third one. Is that right? And the second one is really, really good. First Contact is really, really good. I saw this one in the theater, and I remember at the time being kind of like, well, that was a letdown. But watching it today, it felt like watching a really good episode of the show. And I said in our last episode, like, that's really all I want out of a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, it seemed like an episode, a television episode, more than 100%. Like a full-grown movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a television episode that's longer and has slightly better effects.
I wasn't expecting it to be as horny as it was. there's that.
Riker is always horny, and Troy is along for the ride. I very much enjoy them together.
I know that Patrick Stewart is angry that his makeout scene was cut from the final movie.
I was going to say, why don't they kiss? It's not like they're lesbians in a movie in the 1990s.
So he wasn't allowed to get some smoochies?
Right. He got some smoochies, but then they didn't show us those smoochies. Those were just which makes them just for him. It's a little naughtier.
Can we talk about how hot Donna Murphy is in this movie?
Is that the Baku lady?
That's his love interest.
Okay. Yeah, she's pretty. Where do I know her from? Like, where else do I know her from? Like, a lot of shit? Like, one of those?
She's one of those. But, I mean, the first things that come to mind, one is she is in Spider-Man 2. she gets blown up, turning Doc Ock into the monster that he becomes. And also, you wouldn't recognize her face from this, but I'm pretty sure she's the voice of the bad lady in Tangled, which, is a incredible performance.
What, the mom?
The mom, yeah.
Her biggest credits are on the stage. She's like a multi-time Tony nominee.
No, you're right, Robin.
Oh, great.
But she sold this kind of dumb plot line so well. And more importantly for me, she looked so much like my one true one-night stand that it was deeply unnerving throughout the entire film. But
okay.
That's neither here nor there.
True. Yeah. One night. Yes. No, well, Mia After Dark. All right.
I also only have one night stand.
It might have technically been two.
Hearts.
But like the only person with whom lots happened, whom I was not dating. Does that sound? Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Did it happen only one time? Because if it did, that's not a one night stand.
It's a booty call.
Right.
It's a while ago. I mean, I think maybe
that's a barn chicken.
That's not a one night stand.
I don't know.
Come on, that's a fling.
Yeah. Okay, fling, yeah. Fling. Distracting, but yes, she was very good.
Was your wife sitting next to you watching this while this was distracting?
She's not watching this shit. Why would she give 2 hours of her one and only life to Star Trek Insurrection?
I know that's right.
What?
Okay.
She's not. Mary Beth is not resistant to this. Like, we went and saw Wrath of Khan and watched one episode to set that up. But, like, we're both like, show us the good stuff. We're not going all in and, like, picking up scraps of Star Trek. Like, I'm sorry. But Camille and I are both like, meh, and Robin's like, Data is fun.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I love the flotation device bit.
The flotation device bit took me out.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I love about Data as a character is that he genuinely loves being alive.
Yeah.
Like, he is just sucking the marrow out of life at all times. And he loves art, and he has a cat named Spot, and he is just such a pure ray of sunshine and really great character. And I thought he was good in this, too. I thought he was well-used.
I kind of enjoyed his conversation with a little kid about, you know, I often wonder what it's like to be a child. And I mean,
right,
it was cute.
He never was one.
Yeah, but it's not enough for me to, like, really, like, give a shit.
Now that Robin has presented that perspective for a slightly different perspective, Camila's going to tell you what happened in this movie. Don't worry, we'll throw it back to Robin to correct and or amend those comments immediately afterwards.
Once again, I didn't wear glasses.
But let's see how it goes first. Here with your 60-second recap, here's Camila Adams.
The Enterprise discovers that Data has malfunctioned while on a mission observing the Baku, a bunch of hippie types who turn out to be immortal. They reject technology and just want a simple life. The hippies catch them giving a fuck when it wasn't their turn to give a fuck, and Picard's like, oh, my bad. We thought you needed help, but they started hanging out and the whole Star Trek is feeling different from being on the planet like LeVar can see now. So Picard's boss wants him to stop the bullshit and go back home, but then Picard finds out there's this gross-looking dude named Rufio who's all, I want that planet, and that's why they told you to find it. See, Rufio and his people were on the planet but got kicked out for trying to take it over. Picard and his crew helped stop a takeover. The hippies let the rest of Rufio's people back, but not him. And the Starfleet goes back to cruising the galaxy.
Okay, that was excellent. I don't the only thing that sounded inaccurate to my ears was Rufio, but I couldn't tell you what that character was named. So from now on, you mean F. Murray Abraham, right?
Yeah,
The main bad guy. Yeah, yeah. We'll call him Rufio. Whatever. Yeah.
It was like, I don't know. I heard an R and an F in there somewhere when I was...
I'll probably call him Academy Award winner F. Murray Abraham.
Right.
The combination of his performance and his awesome Hellraiser face
are
my favorite thing about this movie.
I genuinely love the character design on those aliens. And the moment when he gets mad and his face splits is so cool.
Not as good when he kills the one Federation guy by putting him in the face stretching machine.
And it
looks like whichever Mario game began where you could pull Mario's face around a little bit. I think it was Mario 64. It looked like that.
I don't remember that.
That was real bad.
Yeah, the effects are inconsistent, I think, is the nice way to say it.
Like the
visual effects.
Okay.
Yeah, like there are definitely times when I'm like, oh, that looks pretty cool. And then there are other times, like the face stretchy machine, or the space sails, or all the moments when Donna Murphy stops time, which I also still don't understand.
Squirrel in Over the Hedge.
I'll take your word for that one, Sean.
Oh my God, I can't believe you haven't seen that, Robin.
No.
I think you would enjoy it.
Okay, noted.
It's adorable.
I'll add it to my... Isn't Bruce Willis one of the voices?
Yeah.
Okay, Colin's best friend is obsessed with Bruce Willis, so I can probably convince her to watch it with me.
Yeah.
Michael Madsen as a bear is the main villain. Yeah. I think I remember it most distinctly because there were two animated... There was a Dante's Peak volcano situation specifically about scenes where a squirrel stops time. Like, that happened in two animated movies that year. I can't remember what the other one was.
Probably an Ice Age?
It wasn't an Ice Age. It was something else like that. But there were two distinct films where a squirrel got really hyped up and moved fast.
Maybe
and
Bolt?
Over the Hedge was the better one.
I was thinking Bolt, too.
There's a hamster in Bolt.
We're here for Star Trek Insurrection.
Please let Over the Hedge. Is Over the Hedge on the list?
I do have to say the whole name every time, so I'm never like, let's talk about an insurrection. No. Star Trek Insurrection was released December 11th, 1998, the 26th number one movie of that year. Low number, because we're in 1998. Titanic, most of the early part of the year. It won its opening weekend with $22 million, easily beating the third week of A Bug's Life and fellow debut Jack Frost. Not the horror one, the family one with Michael Keaton, which was equally horrifying if you consider the metaphysical implications of it. Just a one-week winner, it fell to fourth. From first to fourth the following weekend, behind the debuting You've Got Mail, the debuting Prince of Egypt, and A Bug's Life, dropped back below Pixar in weekend two, $70.1 million total. That's 28th overall for 1998, third from the bottom among Star Trek movies. We just kind of went over this list, so I won't go too deep. The Undiscovered Country just barely earned more money than this movie. That's the next one up the list. It made $74 million. The only ones that made less than Star Trek Insurrection were The Final Frontier from 1989, the worst performing with the original series, and Star Trek Nemesis from 2002, which is the worst performing of them all. It is the only one that is not on our list.
And the only one with Tom Hardy.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. We'll get to him and You Can't Handle the Truth. Don't worry.
Yeah, we will.
The Tom Hardy content is coming. As Robin said, this is the third film with the Next Generation cast after 1994's Generations. That's the one with the original series cast. And 1996's First Contact. Both First Contact and Insurrection were directed by Jonathan Frakes. This is a Jonathan Frakes picture. First Contact was his...
A lot.
He directs a lot of TV.
That counts.
And now mostly Star Trek TV.
That makes sense.
First Contact was his featured debut. He had directed several episodes of The Next Generation, but sure. First Contact was his first feature. He made two more movies. One was called Clock Stoppers for Nickelodeon. That was a Nickelodeon sci-fi thing. And a movie called Thunderbirds, which was a massive box office bomb. He went to director jail. He has not left. He has Got not it. Made it. That's like 2004, and he hasn't made a feature since. But he has worked on Castle, NCIS, Burn Notice. He did one Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He has done lots and lots of Star Trek, including episodes of Picard. So that's kind of nice.
That His bills fantastic. Are being paid. He's yeah. fine.
Yeah. Oh, he's Jonathan Frakes is fine, so everybody.
If he's in charge, then why did he allow his beard to be shaved?
Maybe he wanted a break.
He just looks so much better with a beard. I don't get
Maybe
it.
He's got yeah, a scratchy does. Face.
But I did really like when she goes yuck and he says, "You kiss me and say yuck," as the elevator door was closing. It reminded me of that one scene in Working Girl. Mm. Somebody listening knows what I'm talking about.
That
yeah.
that subplot did nothing for me because it was so rooted in they're getting yes. back together, and I'm like, I don't know who you are, so I don't care. Like, you're just two people with a past I didn't hear about.
Right.
But you didn't think they had like undeniable chemistry?
No. I mean,
when she's like touching his neck?
No. Not in the sense of where they seemed very familiar with each other.
Well, yeah.
I didn't like feel like envious of what was happening between them. Like, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, I wasn't, didn't get me. Yeah. It just felt forced. I don't like in the plot of it, what they were doing. It felt like it didn't need to happen. But if we're, you know, you're a stranger in this house as myself,
yes.
it's like, yeah. I'm not going to know what's going on. I don't know where your plates go. So I don't.
the Picard one, you know, it's like, okay, there's hippies around, he's in this beautiful place, like, yeah, he's falling for someone, great. The Frakes one felt like a thread from the show that didn't need to be there. Worf's puberty thing, what the hell was that?
Okay, couple things. Number one, okay. It's because of visiting that planet.
Yeah.
Right? Like, everybody's reverting to a more youthful state, and his more youthful state involves acne.
And long hair,
yes. So
I was also thrown off.
I think his hair is always long, though.
But, like, someone said that he needed a haircut or something, I remember.
Yes,
he
you're
was
right.
Like, he was like, when blah, blah, blah goes through puberty, this is what happens.
I see, okay.
And there was a line... Like, between him and Data's like, have you noticed how your boobs have started to firm up? And then we just kind of, like, go away, and then something explodes, and then I'm like, what?
He was repeating, what's her name and what's her name? One of the two women on the ship said it to the other one.
Oh, okay.
And Data was just repeating a
Dr.
thing
Crusher.
He had heard.
Thank you. Okay.
Sorry, Counselor Troy and Dr. Crusher. Gotta show some respect.
As you were with your faxies, John.
Do you think he's hot, though?
Who, Franks?
yeah, Riker.
He is an attractive man.
Okay.
But he's not for me.
I mean, this is also, you know, when he's older and puffier. There is a phase on the show when he is just, like, pure sex.
It's just, like, again, like, I could see after spending some time with this character, because he seemed... Like, what was happening between him and her, it was all very natural, like, between the two of them. And it felt like, obviously, this is something that's had been going on a while. And I feel like if I was in it from the beginning, obviously, I would have cared about what was happening. And I would have been like, oh, whatever. Like, because I like his playful nature
mm-hmm.
with her. I did enjoy that.
Yeah. You should watch him sit down in a chair. Ugh.
What? Oh, I've seen that.
Yes.
I've,
okay.
I've definitely
What are you
seen
talking
that.
About?
He also, Franks. I don't think he sits down ever in this movie. The way that Riker sits down is he steps over the back of the chair, and it is the sexiest fucking thing.
It is.
Have you cool. seen that video slowing down his introductions on Beyond Belief?
Yes.
Camila, do you remember his spooky shit show, Beyond Belief?
Oh, yeah.
The premise is if you slow his speech to half speed, it just sounds like a drunk guy saying random things. Have you ever seen a clown?
How superstitious are you? Do you love to go a-wandering beneath the clear blue sky? Did you ever have a job as a waiter? What do you want to be when you grow up?
It's great. That's really good. That's my favorite thing about him. Not this movie. To Robin's point earlier, this is the first Star Trek movie where all of the space effects were CGI. That's why it's a little...
That's interesting.
They're still feeling it out. And this is
speaking
before,
of everybody got new equipment.
Yeah. This is like before Phantom Menace. And in fact, I think the previous two movies had LucasArts or Skywalker, like some of that.
Oh, interesting.
That camp doing some of the effects.
I
they,
didn't
were
know that they were
all unavailable.
Allowed. I thought it was like, you know, you and your old time travel self being in the same place at the same time.
But LucasArts did everything for
Yeah,
a
while. I guess so.
But they were all working on Phantom, because this is a year before, so everyone who had ever worked on effects was working on Phantom Menace. So the people who were left around to do this, you know, were just we're just doing their best. As you might imagine, this went through lots and lots of drafts on the way to a shooting script. They wanted something lighter and funny and sexy. That was the goal.
That's because probably where the flirting stuff comes in.
Yeah. Apparently the whale one is light and funny, and that was a big hit. They wanted to do this generation's whale one. What's the name of the whale one?
The Voyage Home.
The Voyage Home. They wanted to imitate that. I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
It's a fish out of water comedy because they time travel. Mm. So
okay.
This is not, they don't use any comedic premises in Insurrection. Mm. So that's where they went wrong.
Yeah.
Mm.
It also had a staggering number of working titles. Some of the words that came after Star Trek in this title along the way included Stardust, Prime Directive, The Enemy Within, Breach of Promise, Apostasy, Where Time Stands Still, Beyond Paradise, Sacred Honor, Rebellion, Act of Treason. They just gave up and settled on Insurrection because no one could agree.
I think Prime Directive probably would have worked because everybody knows what that means and it is actually relevant to the plot.
Yeah.
It would have been better than Insurrection.
Yeah.
Because, like,
it's
I know what that
is. Insurrection.
Yeah. Star Trek, Brief Dispute. Like,
this one leans heavy where it's erection. Like, it's like really, you're really like digging deep. You're going to get the toilet humor out of this.
Did you just say your bad it's pun. Erection?
Yes, I did.
Nomia, After Dark.
Man, you get us to 8:31 p.m. and things get wild.
But you are right. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
It's like you can't. I can't hear new directions without hearing nude erections. Like it's
I never. Everyone. That's a common phrase. People
I
are
know.
Like, oh, we got to find a new direction. Oh my God! Now I'm hearing it.
Oh God! The glass is shattering.
Well, two fun facts that aren't as fun as that. There were a lot of drafts where Data was killed, and that was because Brett Spiner felt that he was just aging out of the role. Like, he felt like, okay, I can't. I don't think it was, like, self-deprecating. I think it's like, I have aged.
Right.
A robot does not. Therefore, I have to go now.
It's like David Boreanaz and being Angel.
Yeah.
They gave him the script, and it had a note that said, kill you next time. So, yeah.
That's
Does
really
he
sweet.
End up? Do they end up killing
yes.
him?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Or is it next time?
Yep.
Okay, good.
How do you
good to know. And finally, they changed the ending. Audiences didn't like. There was an effects-heavy ending where F. Murray Abraham was thrown off of whatever ship or whatever he was on and fell to the planet. And because he was falling through the rings of the planet, he like
turned
visibly
into a baby.
De-aged as he fell. And audiences were apparently going like, so is he just fine and alive now? What happened? Where is he? And so then they said, okay, blow him up. Just make him be on fire.
They should have gone with that. They should have made him age in reverse into a sperm and an egg.
Do they stop? Is this a full Benjamin Button planet or do they stop at a certain
they
point?
They stop at a certain point.
I think that you just, because you also, the 12-year-old is 12. So I think it's like once you are reached maturity,
right.
You're done.
Then it stops.
So like they decided, Donna Murphy, you are hottest at 45.
Mm-hmm.
Which like I think might be true. She's crazy hot in this movie.
So I really, this made me love Patrick Stewart even more.
Mm. The
like
Mambo
I said,
bit?
Oh, Mambo bit was real good. The beads that he had to wear and just his every non-reaction to them. Perfect.
One of my favorite Star Trek bits is when they have to do space diplomacy and it's just like an embarrassing, silly thing you have to do. Love it every time.
Yeah, just look in this box, pull something out and put it on your head. Like this is... Because I didn't have my glasses on at first. So when I'm watching it, I was like, does he have fake braids on the top of his bald head? Like just two pigtails?
Captain Picard, that is problematic.
But having not seen a lot of this, he's really good in this. He's not just, you know, I know that he's a good, serious Shakespearean actor. He was really good. And it's so weird that it's coming from this movie, which I didn't dislike, but I cared nothing for. I think he's the better with Shatner. I think, like...
Most people agree with you.
It really? I feel like... Okay. That's most, not an unpopular opinion?
Not at all, no. It's possible that with, like, the people who watched the original series as it aired feel differently, but my parents are dead. I don't know those people. So, right. Like, everybody our age prefers Picard.
He's just such a good actor, which Shatner isn't. I mean, Shatner has skills, but he's not like, oh, what an actor I'm looking at.
No.
And he has gravitas and this, like, captain-like demeanor that Shatner also doesn't have. Shatner is, you know, a roguish, you know, swashbuckler. To me, he's an Indiana Jones type. You know, he's like the bad boy, which is why Chris Pine worked well for him. Like, he's the bad boy who is... risen to authority, but he's not like a captain, and Patrick Stewart is.
Okay. Yeah. I disagree, but I feel like this sounds so obnoxious. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm just sort of basing it on the full canon more so than the couple movies you've seen. He's much more captainly and much less roguish, even though he is roguish at his core.
Mm-hmm. Camila, can you pick one, or do you not care enough to form an opinion?
I would say Picard. Just because, like, the same reason we were saying, he has this more of a captain-like state. Like, I feel like, yeah, this guy, he came into the joint, like, wanting to be to this rank. He wanted to be captain. But Shatner, I feel like he got that position because nobody else wanted it. Like, that's kind of how it felt like. Not that he's incapable of doing the job. It just, sometimes, and again, like, the very limited time I've spent in this universe... It always feels like everybody else around him knows better than what he's actually doing.
The big problem with Kirk is that he's always right. But the problem is that he is actually always right. Right? Like, people complain about that, but it's true. My big answer is ¿Por qué no los dos?
¿Por qué no los dos?
Because I love them both with my whole heart.
I like one a lot more than the other. But I see what you're saying. Speaking of people I love, LeVar Burton with the pinch hit home run. He does not have a lot to do in this movie, but when he makes that sunrise speech,
I genuinely got choked up. It's like, this is so good.
Right? This is the only thing I'm feeling at this point. It's just like, because it stopped me. Like, I'm doing other things while this thing is playing. And then he comes out and is like, you know, my ocular bubble. And it, after I... Again, not knowing what's what. Like, I know he wears the things on his eyes, but I didn't know that he was, like, technically blind. Like,
I don't even know. It's, they show his vision sometimes, and it's like he could see light and dark and shapes, but it's not. So he is very visually impaired. Okay, I don't remember why.
But a sunset would be a big deal to him.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was a beautiful moment, and whew, God bless him.
Yeah.
Protect LeVar Burton at all costs.
An angel on this planet.
I didn't think that I could think more of him, and then his subplot on Community happened, which is just, what a guy. I guess I don't want to stay on this forever because we just did a Star Trek episode. True. And we, you know, but I think it's worth having the brief discussion with, like, was Picard right in this scenario?
Yes. Because this is the thing. If there were anything that could convince me that they could actually distribute this ring's power in some the Planet Ring's power in some kind of equitable way, I would feel very differently. But the reality of it is that that power is going to be abused horribly, and the worst people are going to be the only people who benefit from it, and it's not theirs.
Yeah.
Uranium. I mean, it, or what is it?
In Avatar? Unobtainium?
Yeah, or no, Wakanda.
Vibranium.
Vibranium. Vibranium, yes.
Dumb Wakanda sci-fi movie magic.
Yeah, Wakanda's a really good comparison. Because well, it's except, like, we have this thing that everybody would want, and so we are just going to keep to ourselves.
Right.
Well, the interesting thing is, they take time to be like, just so everybody knows, this is not the native population of this planet. These are some people who showed up here and discovered that it has magic healing powers, and because they were here first, no one else can have it forever. Like, I
what happened to the original inhabitants?
We're meant to believe that there were no higher life forms here until these people showed up.
I that seems plausible, or they chose to leave for some reason.
So these are just, you know,
it's not like they are conquering people. Like,
these guys found the magic before capitalists found the magic, but not by a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's if I gave this movie a little more credit, I would be saying this actually is an interestingly ambiguous political thing to be playing with.
Sure.
Giving it less credit, I'm like, I just don't think they made a very neat narrative, but there's something here. Patrick Stewart said at one point that Picard was wrong.
Okay.
In this movie.
Well, I just agree with whatever Patrick Stewart says.
I think it's also, I don't know, the part when he says, every time you forcibly remove people, bad things happen, really hits hard in 2025.
No, that's true.
So yeah. I'm not
in the movie called Insurrection.
Yeah, I definitely didn't want to be like, yeah, he's wrong. I don't feel comfortable doing that at this moment.
So here's a fun little tidbit from my life. Way back when, I used to work for Office of Public Art. And we would do this thing is where we did public art tours in different languages. Mm. And then one day, I was like, have we tried some of the made-up languages? And they're like, tell me more. Because I'm the only, like, film geek in the office.
Uh-huh.
Can we do Dothraki? Can we do blah, blah, blah? We did a Klingon one.
That is so cool. That is such a good idea.
A public art tour downtown. Found a guy who spoke Klingon. He wrote a script and everything and did all that business, and he did it himself. Had to go to the dude who invented the Klingon language.
Wow.
To get him to help with some of the translation, but also to make up new words. He had to make up like 28 new words in Klingon because Klingon does not have words.
Permanis?
Because Klingon does not have words to describe beauty. Things of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to make a public art tour in Klingon, that's yes.
So you personally are responsible
yes.
for 28 words in the Klingon language?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't understand how you're not telling everyone you meet that.
I guess I never put it in that way, but yes, this was my idea to do the thing. So yeah, I guess I am.
That's so cool. Thank you for your contribution to the fandom.
But does it make you mad that it's someone who completely doesn't care about this fandom? No, it's still nice. It's still nice.
No, it doesn't.
You're welcome. I am giving to those.
Yes. Yes.
You give to fandoms you don't even give a shit about.
Right?
You're still giving.
Right?
Also, the DVDs have Klingon subtitles available, which
really?
I think is really cute.
That's adorable.
Here's my much worse story that ties in here. A long time ago, I had long, stringy hair.
Can't picture it.
I have seen a picture of this.
Wow. Oh, Camila, you took a picture of this. You like for a long time.
That, that's what you're talking about, long string? That's not what I was envisioning. Okay.
Yeah. Camila, in her photographer days, took a picture of me in this era that was like a profile picture or some kind of picture for years. Not that you're not in your photographer days. You know what I meant.
Yes.
Anyway, to the point, I had shoulder length hair with a lot of volume and yet not a lot of body. Browner than it is now, but still definitely not on the way to gray. For a while with a bad beard and mustache, but that just wasn't working. So for a long time it was clean shaven, but with this long hair. And one day I was in Get-Go and the security guard at the Get-Go walked up to me and said, "Do you know who you look like?"
Uh-oh.
which rarely is great,
right?
But it's usually like at least neutral. And she said, "You look like that crazy scientist in the movie Independence Day."
I was worried that was where this was going.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
Not even Back to the Future, but okay, no. But I guess Data. No. Okay, this is why we got.
I used to talk about this on stage, so it's like, okay, so the socially awkward guy who admits in the film that he hasn't seen the sun in years, that's who you're taking time out of your day to stop me and make sure I know that that's what I look like right now.
You know, that's what's fucked up. Like, and you, like, she knew what she was doing. Like, yeah, keep that shit to yourself unless you're saying, like, you coming in hot talking about you look like Pierce Brosnan. Don't.
And I carried that shame for a while. Well, eventually I just cut the hair and things improved immediately. But it was 2 days ago that I learned that that's Data. I truly did not know that Brett Spiner is both Data and the scientist in Independence Day.
Yeah,
oddly, range. Because, like, that guy was so wacky and animated, and Data is so, you know, kind of monotone.
Well, you've never seen guy with lore. Range.
Hmm?
You've never seen Data's twin brother, Lore.
Oh.
Yeah, Data has a twin computer. So it's like the whole evil twin situation?
Yep.
Or is he just...
Yep. Uninhibited twin, I think, is a better way of putting it.
Shall we rate it? I don't dislike this.
Neither
think it's... I like that it's a small story. I like that it isn't the whole universe is going to blow up. I like that it's, you know, it's grounded, kind of, you know, and I like a bunch of them. 55, and then I put plus one for Worf baseball swinging his gun to kill one of the little drone things. So 56.
Okay. Camila?
39.
Okay. And I started at 70, and then I subtracted a point because Riker shaved his beard, but then I added it back because when he says that his face is smoother than an android's bottom and Data touches his face and does a little... Nah. So 70
adds up to 55. 55 is the score. Our recent journey to Star Trek VI: The Undiscovered Country was a 61. So we have lost a few points. And Robin, on that like every other movie thing, this is supposed to be one of the bad ones.
Correct.
Canonically, so, but we still didn't hate it. About the same score. Here, listen to some of the trailer.
It is human nature to wonder what it would be like to never grow old, to experience utter peace and harmony. And it is also human nature for some of us to want what we do not have.
Alert! Area 12!
And for others to stand in their way.
We are participating in the outright theft of a world.
We're only moving 600 people. We'll be able to help billions.
How many people does it take before it becomes wrong? How many people does it take, Admiral?
Who wouldn't be tempted by the promise of perpetual youth?
Lock and load.
Move these people out!
Stand in defiance.
Definitely feeling aggressive tendencies, sir.
Hold your ground.
If a court-martial is the only way to tell what is happening here, I welcome it, Admiral.
Join the rebellion.
Blow off the ram scoop. Stand by. Full thrusters.
Star Trek Insurrection.
The trailer looks accurately mid. Like,
I don't want to, like, go back to
this is a Star Trek movie with the Next Generation cast. Come,
I don't
want to
go on any more voyages with these people.
Oh, wait. I got to adjust my score because I have to deduct another point for not having opening credits that appropriately Star Trekify. Like,
oh, they don't
watch...
say the final. That was a trivia thing I saw.
Right. This is
the only one that doesn't give a star date.
It's like, it's just, if you watched the credits after the Paramount logo goes away and, like, the Star Trek music ends, it would just look like you're watching any kind of, like, movie set in a farm area, and you'd be like, weren't a lot of these people on Next Generation?
Right, because I started the movie, left the room, and came back to the farm situation. I was like, did I hit the wrong thing? Like, what
exactly
is happening?
So, Sean, correct the record. I'm at 69. Nice. No, Mia, After Dark.
You went back to get to 69. It was a whole thing. 54 and two-thirds. Okay, take
thank
that.
Thank you. It's really important that I acknowledge that mistake.
The trailer goes well with our letterbox list, which is fuck off, sunglasses emoji. I can be nostalgic about the late 90s and early 2000s. Just a list of brightly colored, big pants wearing movies from like 98 to the... It starts with six consecutive movies that have Freddie Prinze Jr. in them and then goes into Spy Kids. So that's the...
So this person was born in 1990.
Yes, definitely sounds like that.
Good for them.
Good for them. To the bingo card. I left my bingo card at Camila's, so I don't know.
Nothing.
Okay, can we call the Gilbert and Sullivan song a needle drop?
What is the Gilbert and Sullivan song?
They have a, they sing that song from the HMS Pinafore to, like, deprogram Data. He's, like, zooming away, and they're like, oh, you know how we can get him to, like, remember who he is and what he's doing? By
this is a real
him...
song?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's from All right.
From the, we'll the HMS Pinafore.
Oh, bingo.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Yay!
Just you,
just
not me.
Yep, just you.
I was going to ask you, as a forum question, do we think this is, obviously it's not as good as Sideshow Bob singing the HMS Pinafore in the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons.
What never, no never, what never, hardly ever.
Where does this stack up against other HMS Pinafore references in pop culture, like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, The West Wing? There's more.
No, I was thinking along similar lines. Here's my question. What is that a reference to? Is that a reference to Sideshow Bob singing Cape Fear as a way to mess up Sideshow Bob's evil intentions, which is only a few years old at this point?
Definitely.
That's a relatively current reference.
I don't think so.
Or is it a reference to Sala singing a British tar as he exits in Raiders of the Lost Ark?
I forgot that that happens. Man, HMS Pinafore is everywhere.
Yeah. Clearly. Really is. Camila had to be assured that it's a real thing.
Yeah, really, I'm looking up real quick.
All right, congratulations on your bingo. What is it?
What do I win?
I don't think it's two either, but I wasn't sure.
It's the first one.
Then you get a veto.
Great.
Okay.
Veto acquired.
I think you have one and...
I have one and now Camila has one.
Great.
Because we've been spending vetoes a lot recently.
Yeah. Yeah, I later this week I have to go back and listen to see all the stuff we vetoed because I haven't been... There's been so many.
Yeah.
It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth, and the rest of the panel has caught up with me and seen Tom Hardy, sneering super cop, in Havoc.
I mean, it's Tom Hardy. Like I said, I'm a little biased. It's a good shoot-'em-up bang-bang movie, but that's just like, I mean, it just seemed off at
it's
some point.
So grim? I think was like that's why I didn't finish it when I started it the other day, because I was just like, this is just making me feel sad and like I need to wash my hands, you know. Like,
well, like everybody didn't have to be so like his home life didn't have to be so terrible,
right?
And I also, they didn't give Oliphant enough to do.
Okay, that was my other point. It's like, what is he doing? I mean, what is Forrest Whitaker in this, like, Academy Award winner Forrest Whitaker, what are you doing in this movie?
I feel like he was like trying out three different accents like throughout the film.
Oh, I didn't even notice. But I will say that like once it got cooking and like it just became just, we're gonna just be fighting and shooting for the rest of the movie,
that was,
then I was into it. I was really into it at that point. And I also did really like the bad lady again.
The dude's mom?
Great. Like,
oh my God.
She was
so
scary
cold.
But also I want to have brunch with her, you know? Right. Like, what more could you want in a movie villain?
Right. And like, but I was also, I was confused by the girl that he was protecting.
Ugh.
How she just out of nowhere, she's this badass fighter. Like, and that's just never explained. Like, how is she like running through this whole thing, like trying to be protected? But she like, she just hauls off and like, okay, so you know jujitsu all of a sudden. Okay.
I wasn't paying enough attention to really like this. Like I told Camila, I texted her like, have you watched this? Because I'm only going to finish it if you have. And then I said like, well, I will watch it as Netflix intended while folding my laundry. And so, yeah, I definitely missed some things. I was also surprised that guy who got hurt at the beginning of the movie, I did not realize that he was the person in the hospital. I full on thought he was dead. So sometimes when you barely watch things on Netflix, they don't repeat the plot to you over and over again, right, like they do in some Netflix things, and then you miss stuff.
But I don't know. It was fun.
It operates on Scott Pilgrim rules. Everyone is a fully trained fighter at all times. Right. It is only a matter of experience. They can get better, but they're starting way ahead. That scene in the nightclub is great.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You know, I liked that they were all scuzzy because then, I might have even said this on the show already, the part of my brain that was like, who's working with who?
Yeah.
Completely irrelevant. Doesn't like, matter. I don't have to care, you know?
Yeah.
It is a good morally ambiguous cop movie. Like, it in no way is this copaganda, right?
No.
Like, there's only that one chick who's like innocent. And also, I thought it was interesting. Her name was Ellie because I just watched Insomnia again. And I think that Hilary Swank's character is also named Ellie. And I'm like, oh, so the innocent lady cop. But like, basically everyone is scummy. It's a very scummy movie.
Yeah, it's gritty. It's dirty. I mean, I enjoyed Tom's performance in it. And
he's great.
And even like Oliphant, not even not used enough, but yeah,
he's also fun. Looking kind of gaunt.
He is, and I don't know what happened because there was something. I
assume
thought,
it's
like,
that he's old.
The last thing I saw him in, I don't remember what it was. He was a little fuller, and
yeah,
so I don't know.
Why does he look taller? Like he's the same height that he was in Scream 2, but he seems like
Tom Hardy is short.
Tom Hardy is a shorter man. Yes.
Okay. That makes Oliphant, so
Oliphant is probably a couple inches taller than me. Maybe 3 inches taller than me.
Oh, so
Timothy Oliphant is 6 feet tall.
I was going to say, he's legit tall.
Yes, and Hardy, I believe, is like my exact height. He might be like 5'9", 5'10".
5'9".
Okay, so not quite a short king, but...
Mm-hmm. No, right.
Not a tall one.
No, not at all.
When you Google this, it just throws a few people that you might be about to Google next. So... Christian Bale is 6'0", Cillian Murphy's 5'9", and Tom Holland is 5'7".
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I definitely picture Tom Holland being taller than that. I mean, I know he's shorter than Zendaya, but who isn't?
How tall is she?
I think she's also 6 feet tall.
Oh, really? I just assumed she was average height and he was
short. I mean, maybe I'm confused because she might wear big shoes.
5'10".
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So just normal tall.
Yeah. Just our tall.
Yeah.
you and me tall.
I'm only 5'8". I just have tall energy.
Really? Because I swear we're the same height.
Okay, so this is the deal. I'm actually 5'8 and a half, but I always feel silly saying that. Because I make fun of Colin for saying he's 5'10 and a half. I'm like, you're 5'10. If you say half, you're short. But then I get this, but I do have tall energy, and then I get this interaction all the time.
Right.
Okay. Heights aside, Robin, what else did you watch?
Well, I got the Criterion Channel for my birthday, so have mostly been watching old weird shit that no one cares about. The one thing I do want to call out, even though it's a 15-year-old movie, is Certified Copy. Have either of you ever seen that? It's with Juliette Binoche.
No.
I remember hearing about it, but I haven't seen it.
I mean... It's just so, it was an immediate 5 stars. I really am stingy with 5 stars on Letterboxd because to me, 4 stars is the most you can get because that's the most you could get from Roger Ebert. So giving 4.5 or 5 stars always feel like A++++. And I was just like, boom, 5 stars. I love this movie. It starts out like before sunrise. It's just two people having like a philosophical conversation. And then it takes a turn. And oh, I love every bit of it. Oh, it was so good. And I watched a newer movie I watched that I'm going to anti-recommend is Holland with Nicole Kidman, which is on Prime right now.
Yes, I have that in my list.
I would say don't bother.
Oh.
How do you feel about What's-His-Face, Tom from Succession? Did you watch Succession?
I liked him in that role.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I could stand him in other things.
Okay, then don't watch this.
Okay. Is he her husband or something?
He is. He does some interesting stuff, I would say, but overall the movie's a big old mess.
Yeah.
Tell me about Benedetta, because that has been on some list of mine forever.
And you should watch that as soon as you get home. You will love that movie. And it has genuinely good sex scenes in it.
What is it about?
Okay.
I've heard people say that to me, and right. I don't know what it is.
It is based on a true story of a lesbian nun who got into trouble for being a lesbian nun, but mm-hmm. more importantly, for saying that she was talking to Jesus. And she has visions.
You misunderstand, and maybe she just said that she saw God.
Right. So she, like, there's a scene where a bunch of guys try to rape her, and Jesus cuts their heads off. There's a scene where a snake attacks her, and Jesus cuts the snake's head off. And there's a bunch of hot girl-on-girl action. And I loved it.
Great. Yep. Sounds good. I'll get to that as soon as possible. What I have seen includes, I'm looking at Robin's diary, not mine.
You're going to be like, The Big Clock. That was another one that I really liked. The Big Clock. Check that out.
Oh, Final Destination, Bloodlines. My God. The best in the series by a mile.
Really?
Because I like that because it's dumb, goofy fun, yeah. But I don't think I had gone above 3 stars on any of them before this one. Right. This is probably on like 3.5, maybe inching towards 4. Wow. But, you know, they stopped making them for 14 years. And then I think when they got the gang back together, they just had the conversation that more horror franchises need to have. That was like, why do people actually enjoy these? Is it the kooky deaths and none of the lore? Great. Let's double up on the kooky deaths. You know, that might make it 5-10 minutes too long, but they do this thing. The big set piece is in the past, so you get that whole round of ridiculous carnage, and then the flash forward. It just, they leaned into it. They did everything that's good about this and none of what's bad. And I refuse to show emotion about Final Destination Bloodlines, but this is Tony Todd's last performance.
Oh.
And he's the character in the movies that the explains Harbinger? The rules of the universe to you. They go and see him, and he has some things to say about death, and then he's like, but it's my time now, and I'm going, and walks out.
No.
And it's, on the one hand, it's hard, but on the other hand, it's actually really, like, cool and appropriate and beautiful.
And I bet he would think it was really awesome.
Yeah.
I think that would make him really happy.
I am not alone in this. It is at 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, which most of these are in the 50s and 60s.
Impressive.
So if you enjoyed these for a minute, go for it. Also, multiple appearances by Truck Full of Logs, a true breakout star of the Final Destination franchise.
This is the thing, is that I'm like, I don't need any more lifelong phobias. I just don't. Did we talk about my whole quicksand thing? That the reason that our parents made art that was full of quicksand, not our parents specifically, but the reason that boomers made art full of quicksand, and that the reason millennials make jokes about, like, when I was a kid, I was afraid of quicksand, is because there's terrifying quicksand in Lawrence of Arabia. So it's basically like if there were a bunch of kids stuff right now with log trucks.
Yeah.
Oh. You don't have to worry about it. The big set piece is basically the Space Needle.
So, My sister lives in Washington State.
Yeah, but she's not going there every day. It's not, legally, it's not the Space Needle. It's a restaurant on top of a Space Needle-like structure a glass floor. So, you know, less something you're going to encounter every day than the log trucks. Odd transition. There's a full quicksand sequence in the Phoenician Scheme, because of course there is. The new Wes Anderson movie, which is bad. I don't know what the hell happened, because I thought that...
We were so back!
We were back.
Go back.
Asteroid City, I really think, is his best movie since Royal Tenenbaums.
Is it because he won an Oscar?
Maybe. This is a more accurate parody of Wes Anderson movies than the SNL parody of Wes Anderson movies. Like, he is just doing things that happen in Wes Anderson movies with no motivation. And it's really weird because this is the one that's like about ruthless capitalism. And it's like, why did you go with the serious topic if you were just going to do dumb, silly bits? It's just dumb, silly bits with some of the Wes Anderson people. It got to a 5 out of 10 for me only because, like, you know, Michael Cera's there for the first time and he's very appropriate for it and he's really pumped and he does a good job. And
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe he hasn't gotten sucked in yet.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people who, you know, I laughed because, you know, it's certainly funny at times, but it's not a good movie. And I don't know where it went so wrong so quickly. I would not really recommend that. On the other hand, I say go see Clown in a Cornfield. Mm. You know what movie does what it promises? Clown in a, there's a clown. Guess where he is? It's like, what more do you want? It's just, you know, I know some of the hardcore horror people are like, this is all teenager stuff. Why is it? Well, because it's based on a really successful young adult novel, actually. And that's, and so they, this was a book first. I bet you didn't think Clown in a Cornfield as literary source material, and yet it does. It's a knowing, winking, nodding teen slasher movie that has like enough gore to be a R-rated horror movie. And entirely satisfying in that regard. Not as good as Final Destination, but if you get those two in a double feature, go for it. Camila, what besides Havoc?
I've just basically been going through Final Destination again and Mission Impossible.
So I also did a Mission Impossible rewatch.
Yeah, is there a word for a person who, like, there's a new installment of a film coming, of a film franchise coming out, and you feel like you have to watch all of them before you go on to that one? Is there a word for that?
I don't know. Because maybe we should ask the guy who created Klingon to make one for us.
But that is me. So that's basically what I've been doing. And I watched Hard Eyes.
How's that?
It's silly. Silly.
Is it silly complimentary?
I don't
smiling.
Know. Okay. I don't. I think. I don't know what I was expecting. I don't think I had high expectations where I was going in with it. But I guess it's, you know, complimentary. It's just a silly little horror movie. And Mason Gooding is great in it. His comedic chops are good. He's got a good comedic timing. And I think I was distracted by, I'm at that age now where anybody under the age of 40 is a child to me. Looking at him and whoever his counterpart was, like his love interest in the movie, and they're talking about doing their grown-up adult things. And I'm like, you guys are like 15. Like, what do you mean? What are you doing?
I just looked at that guy's face because I couldn't remember if I knew who he was. And he's a baby.
I know. But I got to say, that's, the only thing, the only good thing that Cuba Gooding Jr. has brought into this world is Mason.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's that baby, a Nepo baby. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've talked about him before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Camila, Cuba Gooding Jr. brought the greatest Oscars moment of all time into this world. So, going to be okay. In my
he's
book,
Joe but... Pesci.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, but a random TV recommendation. Have either of you started watching The Studio on Apple?
Yes. Loved Charlize.
Yeah.
She's flawless.
I think it's hilarious.
Best one-line performance of all time.
Right. And scene.
Yep. No, I thought it was really cool. What did you think?
I really liked it. I watched to the finale. Did you watch the season finale?
No, I only watched the first couple episodes, but I'm definitely going to, especially now that it's been renewed. Like, that's such a thing with TV for me, is I'm like, why am I going to get invested in something that's going to disappear?
I don't know how you feel about Seth Rogen. Because he gets to be a little grating to me at times. You know, everybody else around him is great. Like Ike Berkowitz, is that his name?
Barkenholtz.
Yeah, Barkenholtz. Him. Fucking hilarious. Like, love that dude. And also, I just love the cameos of just the random actors and celebrities that roll through.
They're really doing a great job at that, like, the player thing of just, like, anyone we can get, we will get.
Right.
Yes.
And Bryan Cranston as, like, the studio head.
Using and it's the same character name as somebody from The Player. They're like legitimately like we're just basically making The Player, guys.
Nice.
Which, like, why wouldn't you? Great movie.
Yep, that's all we got.
We're all seeing Mission Impossible tomorrow.
Like, going on 3 hours long. I'm gonna have to talk about it on the radio the next morning. I'm gonna have to run home to write about it. It's gonna have to be pretty good for me not to walk out of there going, why would 2 hours and 47 minutes? But what are we going to watch next time? Why not watch CC and Company?
The fuck is that?
From 1970.
Let's make sure this exists.
CC and Company is a biker film starring Joe Namath and Anne Margaret. I am so in. Because I think it'll be good, but because of the pure...
Because what the fuckitness?
Yeah.
It's on Tubi.
Okay. Let's find out what the hell that is.
I want to double check the numbers because this was the number one movie in America.
This is like 4.8 on IMDb.
4.8?
Yeah, from the two people. One guy gave it a 5. Another guy gave it a 4.5. That's the two people that have ever watched this.
You mean Anne and Joe?
Yeah. Yeah, October 20th, 1970. For anyone just joining us, we have the numbers are really solid starting in the mid-80s. Before that, they're shaky, but someone did go through old copies of Variety going back to the early 50s and at least added those to Wikipedia. You know, it's not foolproof, but it's the best numbers anybody really has without going very deep.
As reported in Variety. This is the number one movie in America.
On October 21st of 1970, CC and Company.
This is the ride that we're on together.
Look, it's 94 minutes long. What do you want?
Like, it's fine. It's the fact that it's on Tubi, I'm like, yeah. Sure.
I know, right?
I just want to set us up a little bit more from the Wikipedia. In his Chicago Tribune review, Gene Siskel, who supplied it with no stars, the rare no stars, felt it was, quote, hateful, adding, CC and Company is the film that asks the musical question, what do you want, bad acting or bad taste? I am so on board.
Did you say the musical question?
That's what Gene said, but I think he was using that some way.
Okay.
It is not a musical.
Just the fact that he called it hateful,
I guess we're going to find out.
Damn.
Wow.
Rare.
Cool.
Written by Anne Margaret's then husband. Huh. His long term husband, Roger Smith, who was married to Anne Margaret for 50 years until his death.
Oh, good news, guys! Winnie the Pooh is on Tubi also. The Blood Honey,
horror movie. The Blood and Honey one.
Yeah.
Don't watch that one.
I don't.
Sorry, I am so excited to get into this. That's why we do this, everyone. Before we get there, Star Trek Insurrection, December 11th, 1998. What was the number one song in America?
Britney Spears.
No.
Mariah Carey.
Mm-mm.
Brandy.
Christina Aguilera.
I'll jump ahead to say this is a duet that I have never heard of.
Have you heard of the people in the duet?
Yes, certainly.
Okay.
But I had no idea that they did a song together. I will further add that
Celine Dion and R. Kelly?
Correct.
Woo! I couldn't see that.
I don't remember the name of it or anything about it, but just like I remember that big what the fuck.
The name of the song is I'm Your Angel. The fun fact about this
is there gonna be one?
I know.
Is this was throughout the 90s, people were mad at Billboard because Billboard only counted sales of singles. Because especially in the record era, you know, when you were buying a 45 single, that was a good way to determine what the biggest song in the country was. By the 90s, radio airplay was much more important, and a lot of songs, particularly a lot of rock songs, didn't exist on a CD single. So the week before this, they made a change and said airplay only can count on the singles charts. And that's fun because imagine the instant regret. You debate for years, like, all right, we're going to do it. We're going to count radio airplay. What's our new number one song? R. Kelly and Celine Dion? Put it back in the bag.
We take it back.
Number